It seems like this winter has been a weaker one for the most part so far. You're not just imagining it. Aside from putting a damper on a lot of outdoor winter activities, one of the major areas of impact for milder temperatures is the formation of lake ice. According to the North American Ice Service seasonal outlook for the Great Lakes this winter, ice has overall been slow to form this year. We're going to talk about why that is and what less ice cover can mean for life in the Great Lakes and smaller ones, too. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about lake ice? What are you seeing in your neck of the woods? You can give us a first-hand report. When did that local lake freeze up for you? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Jay Austin is a professor of physics and astronomy at the University of Minnesota Duluth, where he works at the Large Lakes Observatory. Jay, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me on.
And Hillary Dugan is an assistant professor at UW-Madison's Center for Limnology. Hillary, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Jay, I want to start with you. I know there's a lot of variability from year to year, even month to month sometime, but big picture, what are we seeing in the Great Lakes when it comes to ice cover this year?
It's a bit of a no-show this year. The lakes in general are at less than 5% coverage. Lake Superior is maybe 1% or 2%. In a normal year, we might be at 10 or 15 in building at this stage. And so it's we've had a really mild winter so far, and the lakes respond to that.
Like I said, there's a lot of variability from year to year. Long-term trends, though, are we seeing less ice on average over the years?
There's still a huge amount of variability from year to year. So people who live up here probably remember 2014, the polar vortex winter. Mm-hmm. Still, by far, the heaviest ice coverage we've seen on the Great Lakes in the last 50 years, the 50 years of good ice records that we have. What we're seeing right now are more and more years with this very, very low ice coverage. And so I've been playing with some statistics recently. Over the last 50 years, from 1973 up to 1998, we had one low ice year. I think it was 1987. Since 1998, we've had nine, and we're on target for a 10th very low ice year this year. And so those sorts of events are becoming more and more common.
And Hillary, I know you have a close eye on inland lakes. How do those match up? What are we seeing in ice cover?
Well, most of our inland lakes in Wisconsin are frozen. Inland lakes are the volume, you know, is not comparable to the Great Lakes. They can freeze so much more quickly. And so when we think about inland lakes in Wisconsin, it's usually when did they freeze and then when did they thaw? We don't have the same measurement of extent, which really gives us a much deeper insight into sort of climatological variability.
And what are we seeing when it comes to the duration? You know, how early it ices over, how late it stays frozen with lakes that you're tracking?
We're pretty lucky here to have some pretty long lake ice records. You know, the lakes in southern Wisconsin, some of them go back a century. And over the last 100 years, we've certainly seen a decrease in the duration of lake ice. We're seeing sort of later freeze up in the winter, earlier thaw in the spring. And the impacts of these polar vortex events are really noticeable. So, you know, this year, the lakes froze earlier than average, because we had such a cold, you know, week or two in December right around the Christmas holiday. So they were able to freeze up. But since then, we've had this relatively mild weather, but it's hovering right around the freezing point in many regions of the state. So the ice hasn't melted, but it's certainly not thickening at the rate that we sometimes see.
We're talking to Hillary Dugan from the UW-Madison Center for Limnology and Jay Austin with the University of Minnesota Duluth's Large Lakes Observatory, looking at ice on lakes big and small, or lack of ice when it comes to the Great Lakes. You could join in with your questions, your own observations. Do you have a local lake? Does it seem like it's less icy or icy for less long over the years? If you're on the Great Lakes shoreline, what are you seeing? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. Jay, when we have less ice on the Great Lakes, what kind of impacts does that have on, you know, shorelines and weather patterns?
Sure. There's a really wide variety of impacts, some of which I'm comfortable talking about and some of which are a little outside my field. Hillary can probably speak to ecological impacts more than I can. Having exposed shorelines like that means that winter storms and waves that would normally be dampened by that ice cover are impacting shorelines and causing erosion. There are issues of, for instance, impacts on the shipping season. And so there are actual economic impacts, high ice years where the shipping season is delayed. There are cultural impacts in the sense that, you know, high ice years, people are going down to the Wisconsin shore to visit the ice caves near Bayfield, or people are ice fishing in Duluth or recreating on the ice. And so there's a wide range of those sorts of impacts.
And Hillary, JT's my next question for you. How do ecosystems depend on ice cover and the extent of ice cover?
Well, overall, it's pretty complex. You know, ice transforms lake ecosystems because it effectively seals off the water column from the atmosphere. And so if we think about physical processes, you know, we have things like evaporation change. So if you have no lake ice, you can have a lot higher evaporation rates. And Jay's done a lot of work on that on Lake Superior. We also transform the light environment. So as soon as you have lake ice and snow on top of that ice, it attenuates light really effectively. And that's important for algae and photosynthesis. You know, they're the base of the food chain. If you're getting light penetrating into the water column, you're going to have more carbon production. It's important for timing of organismal things like fish spawning. We think about fish spawning in the fall. Some other species spawn in the spring. A lot of those cues have to do with lake ice. If we have open water where wind is sort of churning up water along the shoreline, that's going to impact spawning nests. There's a lot of feedbacks on nutrient cycling. There's a whole list of sort of complex interactions that lake ice fundamentally changes in lakes.
A summertime thing, you mentioned algae. We often see that so-called blue-green algae, the cyanobacteria. It's gross. We don't like it in the water. Is ice part of the story of that stuff showing up in the rest of the year?
It might be. There's a lot of people working on that question, trying to think about why we might be seeing more blooms in lakes that we sort of historically didn't see a lot of cyanobacterial blooms in. The mantra has typically been that cyanobacteria like warm water, but we certainly see them in cold water. We're seeing them along the southern shore of Lake Superior in some years, and you know that's a really cold lake. So temperature isn't the whole story. We might be seeing more blooms at different times of the year if you have less lake ice means different water temperatures. It means more sunlight, again, for photosynthesis. It means potentially stirring up nutrients from the bottom of the lake. So there's lots of ways that ice could directly impact algae blooms, but it also could sort of indirectly affect them through these other drivers.
Jay, I want to talk to you a little bit about year-round Great Lake temperatures. I've spent a lot of time in Lake Superior in August, and you know, most years, once you go numb, it's not so bad. Are we seeing changes in temperatures, not just this winter ice cover, but are things changing the rest of the year?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'll start by answering a slightly different question. And that actually ties into lake ice and your experience in Lake Superior in the summer. One thing that we've observed is that winter ice cover is a really good predictor of what sort of summer is about to follow. And so if you have a heavy ice year, you delay the start of the formation of warm water in the summer, and you end up having a relatively cool year. And low ice years, like, for instance, this year seems to be turning out to be, we end up with much warmer. We can start to stratify. We can start to form that layer of warm water much earlier, and we end up with a significantly warmer lake. And so that's one of the things that we've seen recently is the frequency of these low ice years suddenly increasing means the frequency of marginally swimmable water in Lake Superior has actually dramatically increased. So trends in the winter are a little more difficult because we don't have the same body of data. Most of the data that we have from the Great Lakes is collected during the summer. Surface buoys, for instance, that the federal government puts out. My lab has been putting subsurface platforms in Lake Superior since about 2007, represents one of the longer time series of year-round data. And really with 15 years of data, saying anything definitive about trends is tricky. And so I'm going to avoid that for now. But we certainly are seeing the structure of the water during the winter is very, very different between a warm year and an icy year and a cold year.
We're talking to Jay Austin, professor of physics and astronomy at the Large Lakes Observatory at the University of Minnesota Duluth, and Hillary Dugan, assistant professor at UW-Madison Center for Limnology. We're talking about ice on lakes, Great Lakes and inland lakes, the impact it has on ecosystems, the science of it all, and why we might be seeing a shorter periods of ice coverage on the smaller lakes, less extent of ice coverage is pretty low right now on the Great Lakes. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a lake near you? Are you looking at it right now? What has ice been like in recent years on your local lake, whether you're on a Great Lakes shore or on an inland lake? Do you have a question about the science of our lakes, some of the ecosystems, the importance of ice cover? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Coming up, I'll ask each of our guests what questions they are really looking for answers for. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation about lake ice with UW-Madison's Hillary Dugan from the Center for Limnology and Jay Austin, physics and astronomy professor with the Large Lakes Observatory at the University of Minnesota Duluth. We are talking about ice cover, and you could join in with your questions, your own personal observations at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll bring on a caller now. Tom is with us in Milwaukee. Tom, hi.
Hi. I read somewhere that the climate change in terms of warming would affect the upper Midwest less than the coastal areas, and I wondered if that's true and why that might be.
Tom, thanks for the call with the asterisk that you're both looking at water in particular. I wonder if you have comparisons and contrasts with other parts of the country or the world. Hillary, let's start with you first of all.
Well, I'm not sure much about the comparison to the Northeast. Certainly in Wisconsin, what we're seeing is that winter is warming the fastest out of all the seasons. And so that seems to be a trend across the Midwest. In fact, what's changing the most rapidly is winter nights. We're just not getting as cold. So it's really no surprise that what we're seeing change most quickly in lakes is this duration of lake ice. Jay, do you want to jump in on that too?
Well, yeah, and Jay, yeah. I don't know if we have a lot of comparables for the Great Lakes around the world, but what are you watching for?
We can talk about the distribution of climate change effects in general. Mm-hmm. And typically, mid-continent regions are warming faster than coastal regions. Coastal regions have the oceans to sort of moderate their temperature. And mid to high latitude areas are changing faster than equatorial regions. And so where we are right now is a bit of a hotspot. And so there have been a handful of papers in the last several years compiling records of lake temperatures from lakes around the world, and the Great Lakes are right at the top of the list as far as warming rates over the last 40 years.
Tom, thanks a lot for that question at 800-642-1234. I mentioned I wanted to ask each of you what big research questions you are looking for answers on right now. Hillary, I want to start with you.
Yeah, so in inland lakes, one thing that's really interesting is what the feedbacks are of these shorter winters on the rest of the season. Jay talked a bit about the impact of ice duration on water temperatures in the Great Lakes. Certainly in inland lakes, we don't have that kind of temperature lag. They react to the weather much more quickly because they're just a smaller volume. But what we see in a lot of northern Wisconsin is we sometimes don't even see spring in lakes. It kind of goes from winter straight to summer, you know, when the lake ice comes off in May. And so as we push that back and start getting a longer spring period, what the impacts that's going to have on sort of lake biology.
Interesting. And Jay, what question do you have your eye on?
Something that's I've wondered about for a long time, and it's funny that this seems like something we should have nailed down a long time ago. I've mentioned that air temperature plays a huge role in determining the amount of lake ice. In fact, air temperature is almost the entire game. It's sort of amazing how tight the relationship is between winter, average winter air temperature, and the amount of ice that forms. And it doesn't sound like rocket science, right? But the interesting thing is it doesn't depend on how windy it was. It doesn't depend on how much precipitation. It doesn't depend whether the previous summer was warm or cold. All that matters is what is the winter air temperature. I can tell you how much ice will form. The trick is the amount of ice that forms is really sensitive to the air temperature. And the difference between a year where there's basically no open lake ice and a year where there's really substantial open lake ice can be due to a difference in air temperature of 3 or 4 degrees Fahrenheit on average. And so one thing I'd really like to work on, that I am working on, I should say, is understanding the root of that sensitivity.
Talking to Jay Austin from the University of Minnesota Duluth and Hillary Dugan from UW-Madison Center for Limnology, looking at ice on lakes, why there's more or less of it from year to year, the impact it has. Back to your calls now. Peter is with us in Pewaukee. Peter, hello.
Hello. Thank you for the show. About 20, 25 years ago, myself and my kids were in Cornucopia, Wisconsin, and I knew about this beach, and I knew that there were some differences in temperature. Told them to bring a sweatshirt, but they wouldn't listen. When we were in the parking lot, it was 81 degrees. When we got down by the water, it was 59 degrees, and this is in the middle of the summer. Do we still have that big difference of temperatures, air temperatures, during the summer along Lake Superior?
Peter, thanks for that call. A cliche in Wisconsin public radio weather, cooler near the lake. Jay, Cornucopia, that's just along the coast from where you are in Duluth there. That's not uncommon, right, that kind of temperature differential near the lake?
So I have observed in Duluth, Duluth is a very steep city, plunging right down into Lake Superior. And the best I've seen was up, if you go up, we call it up the hill, if you go shopping or something like that, it was 80 degrees up the hill and 40 by the lake.
Wow.
And it's like literally 2 or 3 miles. And it's all just that elevation and being very, very close to the lake. The other thing that may be going on at a site like that, depending on how the wind is blowing, you can bring the cooler deep water up to the surface and have extremely cool water in the middle of the summer. And so if you're swimming on the North Shore and the wind blows just the right direction, the water temperature can drop from a very, very comfortable, 65 or 70 degrees in the middle of the summer to 40 degrees Fahrenheit, which is actually life-threatening. So you have to pay attention.
Peter, thanks for the call. Tom joins us now in Northeast Wisconsin. Tom, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment that I grew up in Northeast Wisconsin and kind of watched. We would wait for deer season was in November. We'd always hope we could go ice fishing the last week in the deer season and then kind of watch and record the dates when the ice come off the lake. There's been some years where ice would come off in March. I remember we were building a house. I work outside, so I watch the climate and temperature weather all the time. And one year in March, it got warm, 70 degrees, and we watched the ice break off and come across. Other year, I remember not too long ago, ice was on the lake in the first part of May, yet we couldn't even go trout fishing and whatnot. It was so cold.
Tom, thanks a lot for the call. We don't have a ton of time left, but Hillary, do you or your colleagues at the Center for Limnology look to people like Tom for citizen science observations about their local lakes?
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of groups that are trying to collect data on just that type of observation. And one of the reasons that we have such good long-term records on lake ice occurrence is people wrote it down. They were interested in it. It impacted their lives and what they could do on lake ice. And, Tom's right. What we're seeing in these long-term records is, yes, there's a trend of shorter ice duration, but there's huge variability in freeze up and thaw now. And so, maybe 50 years ago, you were pretty sure your lake was going to freeze deer hunting week and it was going to thaw in the last week of April. And now we're seeing, you have no idea what's going to happen. Maybe it'll thaw in March or maybe it'll thaw in May. And it mostly has to do with these polar vortex events we're now getting.
Thanks a lot for that call, Tom. Jay, I wanted to ask, what I know ice coverage can change still over the course of a season. What are you watching for in the next couple of months?
Well, the current outlook is relatively mild where we are. And so we're running out of time to form a lot of ice. I say that if you look at the records from last year we had a little bit more ice than we do at this time. We have a little bit more ice, but we had an amazingly cold January and February last year. And we ended up topping out at about 80% coverage in Lake Superior. So it could still happen, but from the sort of long, medium to long-term forecast that I've seen, the likelihood of that is getting smaller and smaller all the time.
We'll leave it there. Jay, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Hillary, thanks for being with us.
Always happy to talk about lakes.
We've been talking to Jay Austin, professor of physics and astronomy with the Large Lakes Observatory at the University of Minnesota Duluth, and Hillary Dugan, assistant professor at UW-Madison's Center for Limnology. We talked to them about the relatively low levels of Great Lakes ice so far this winter, and then the duration of ice on inland lakes, the impact that has on life around the lakes and the ecosystems in the lakes themselves. If you have a local observation to share with us or a picture of your local icy lake, we like pictures. Email ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org. Love to see what's going on near you.